And welcome back to a brand new episode of MTG Eternities. I'm your host, Carl. Today with me, I have a special guest, a very good friend of mine at my local game store by the name of Stevie. I'll go ahead and let him introduce himself.
Hi, my name's Stevie. My name's Steven, but everybody calls me Stevie. So I come to Gerard's Gaming. I'm not allowed to say Gerard's, right? Okay, cool. our usual haunt that we all come and hang out at, play Magic, other activities, board games, stuff like that. I guess I officially started collecting Magic cards around fourth or fifth edition. I can't remember, one or the other. I remember Lord of the Pit was one of my favorite cards. I jumped in and out. You know, I never really officially knew how to play the game. We always played, you know, kitchen table Magic, stuff like that. I guess I officially started playing what you would call competitive Magic when the Theros block came out. I remember my first competitive deck that I built for Standard was Mono Black Aggro that came out when Master of the Feast came out for Journey of the Gods, I think was what it was. Yeah. Journey to Nyx, thank you. That's right. So, yeah, that was when I started playing competitive. And I played EDH beforehand. That was one of my favorite formats. Still is my favorite format. I don't play it as much as I used to, but I mean, I think it's one of the best formats to start out with as a beginner. So
you're also the local judge up here at Gerard. So why don't you go ahead and talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So I'm one of the local judges. There's a couple others, or at least one more I know. I'm just a level one. I qualified to do, you know, GPTs and other smaller events. I can't do like PPTQs or anything like that. But I'm one of the level one judges in the area. Essentially, you can get a level two judge if they feel that they want to make you a level one, and you do a few events with them as a rules coordinator or, you know, rules advisor, a level zero. You can get your level one pretty easily. It doesn't take too much. So, yeah, I decided I wanted to become a judge at one point in time, and that's what I did.
All right. That's good to know. Good to know how we can become judges later if we all should choose to. I know recently Grand Prix Montreal just came out, so why don't we talk a little bit about that? If I remember the list from Grand Prix Montreal, top 8 was 2 Marvelous Energy Decks, Izzet Control, Mardu Vehicles, Golgari Constrictor, I think Mardu Vehicles again, another Marvelous Energy, and to finish off the top 8, it was a Mono Black Zombies. So do you have any initial thoughts on the top 8 for Grand Prix Montreal?
Well, let me first say that I'm not like super big into standard. I mean, I do play standard. I have a couple standard decks, but I'm not a professional standard player or anything. Like Mac, a guy who comes here, he plays a lot of standard and modern. I'm sure eventually he'll become like an actual professional Magic player, which is pretty awesome. But this is just my opinion about the subject, which is not exactly very informed, but I'm kind of surprised to see that Izzet Control isn't as big of a deck in the top 8 as much as it is. It was only one entry in the top 8, and Marvelous Energy seems to be growing to be the number one deck out of all of them. Mardu Vehicles is being pushed back down, which is interesting. You know, I guess it isn't as fast as a deck as, say, Marvelous Energy or Zombies, even though Zombies only made 8th place, which I believe in the Nashville Pro Tour, I think they got first place, which was pretty impressive. I'm just surprised that we're also seeing Constrictor coming back. It was a green black counters, I think is what they call it, Constrictor deck, something like that. I'm once again surprised that the red blue deck is not seeing as much play, considering that it seems to be the nice counter to Marvelous Energy. It seems to be able to take it down. So,
you know, I actually noticed that as well. In the last few Pro Tours and PPTQs and stuff like that we've had, it does seem that Golgari is, for whatever reason, solidly in the middle, but we do have usually a 3, maybe 4 of Marvelous Energy deck somewhere in there. We do have a bit of the Izzet Control deck here at the local game store. I think it's probably, 3, 4 people playing it here? And each one of them, it does seem to have a really decent matchup against the Marvelous Energy deck, but I think the issue is, when it comes to the top 8s of all these grand tournaments, you have people that are just losing to what I like to call the coin flip. I mentioned it last week Marvelous Energy is a lot like a coin flip. You're either going to hit, see the top six cards, and it's going to be four lands and two Tune with Aethers, or it's going to be a Torrential Gearhulk, two Ulamogs, and other kill spells that you can use. And I do think that the Izzet control deck isn't actually ready for that, per se. Since Disallow is usually a three of in the main deck, I think it might be a little hard to hold something in hand against it for the Disallow to stifle the Aetherworks Marvel, or to stifle the Ulamog cast trigger, or even just counter the Ulamog straight up and just let the cast trigger hit. There could be some other things that they might be running, maybe Summary Dismissal or something like that, Exile Everything. Yeah, I think it might be a decent one of side. I don't think a lot of the decks are using it. Instead, they're using stuff like Sphinx of the Final Word, which is a great finisher, or Dragon Master Outcast, which I honestly don't think should be in the deck as is. It dies to too much in the format. Yes, I know removal's never an answer to stuff, but when you have something that dies to Harness Lightning, Shock, Fatal Push, and a bunch of other kill spells, I don't think Dragon Master Outcast is where the deck wants to be sitting.
Yeah, I see your point, but I have been playing this Izzet deck, and as far as Dragon Master Outcast goes, yeah, I can see against a deck that has a lot of heavy removal, it might seem like you don't want to bring it in, but due to the fact that a lot of those people after post-sideboard take a lot of the removal out, they may leave one or two pieces in here or there to deal with your Fumaralls and your Torrential Gearhulks, but Dragon Master Outcast is really there to mostly hit against other control decks, for one thing. Like one of the big things that I've seen is when somebody plays a Sphinx of the Final Word, one of the only kind of things that you can do to respond to that is play a Dragon Master Outcast when it starts putting out, you know, 5/5 dragons that can block that Sphinx of the Final Word and still be alive. Really, there's no other way to deal with it once it's on the board because, you know, it's hexproof and, you know, it's pretty much, unless you have a board wipe that deals with it, you'd have to have, and they don't even run board wipe, they just run two Sweltering Suns, which they side out, so it's almost impossible to deal with. So the Dragon Master Outcast is like the only real option that you can go with that, or your own Sphinx of the Final Word. So
point taken. Do you think maybe there's a different thing that they could run as an alternative finisher other than Sphinx or Torrential Gearhulk or even Dragon Master Outcast? Is there maybe a sleeper bomb card that you think would potentially do well in this sort of deck? Like, one of the cards that comes to mind for me, especially since the deck is very counter-heavy, is why not run Metallurgic Summonings? 5-drop enchantment, whenever you counter something, put a XX construct into play where it's that counter spell's cost.
Yeah, Metallurgic Summonings is a really, really good card. It's a shame that we haven't really seen it lately. I would like to see more of it. I think it got really popular after, I think it was a Saffron Olive deck or something. MTG Goldfish made it pretty popular. And then I think it won some sort of, I don't remember exactly, but it won some sort of a tournament and got really popular. And then it just kind of faded away. I think it's a solid card. There's not a lot of main board enchantment hate. I guess Cast Out is really the only one, and not a lot of people are running Cast Out in their main decks. But yeah, man, that's a solid one too. Ones that I really like, one of my favorites is Glyph Keeper. I really wish that I could see this being played in standard a little more often, even main board. It's a 5-drop, 5/3 flying. It says that whenever it becomes the target of a spell or ability for the first time, counter that spell or ability, and then you can embalm it for 7, which is an activated ability from the graveyard. I think it's an activated ability from the graveyard. So, which means that they have to have a disallow in order to counter that. So, for all intents and purposes, you need 4 kill spells to get rid of that card, which for control v control is a really good option. And there's also a couple planeswalkers like Jace, Unraveler's Secrets, Chandra, Torture Defiance. Mainly you're just trying to get emblems down to win the game that way. And I've always been a big fan of Dynavolt Tower. I mean, it's a slow, painful death, but it's definitely a fun one. A lot more thinking involved, interaction kind of things, so.
So you mentioned Chandra, Torch of the Defiance, which is great. I actually really enjoy the card. I used to play it as a 3-of when I was playing Aetherworks Marvel before the Emrakul ban, of course. Right now, I'm still messing with my Grixis control deck. It seems to be doing rather well online, and so far the only matchup that I've had a really hard time with, ironically enough, is the Izzet control matchup. So as it comes to finishers, do you think Chandra Flamecaller actually has a potential in the Izzet control deck, or is it just too high of a drop, or is it just not consistent enough?
Yeah, Chandra Flamecaller is a really, really good card. I mean, she's a six drop, which is perfect for control. Her plus one throws down a lot of damage, six damage on the board. I think the best friend for the control player would be the zero ability, where you get to discard your entire card and then draw up to your hand plus one, which is a slightly better memory because, I mean, you're only doing it for yourself and your opponent's not drawing back up to seven. So, yeah, I really like that idea. The only problem is that she doesn't leave down a lot of blockers, I guess, or she doesn't do what a lot of good control planeswalkers do, which is find ways to protect themselves. One thing that comes to mind is Elspeth, Sun's Champion, was one of the best control planeswalkers ever made because it threw down three guys that could block for Elspeth. And it wrathed the board in case things got a little too out of control, which was, like I said, one of the best control planeswalkers that were out there. Chandra, she doesn't so as much. I mean, it's a great finisher against another control player, and that zero ability is really, really awesome. So, yeah, it's a decent idea. I like that one, but just kind of suffers from the lack of other things that other planeswalkers for control decks can do.
So that's a good point to bring up. I do think that's where control likes to go. And maybe there might be some variant that runs it on the side. It only, I think, with time, we'll see a little bit more results. Another deck that I'm noticing has an issue, especially right now taking top eights, is the Golgari Energy or the Golgari Counter deck. I'm just going to universally call it as Golgari Constrictor, because to me, that's what it is. They all share usually one card, maybe two cards in common when it comes to their win strategy. So what do you think the issue is that the Golgari decks are having? Usually from what I've seen in the top eight, there's one or two, not even two, there's usually one Golgari deck in the top eight, and the rest fail to make the top eight. So is there any particular reason why you think that that is occurring right now?
So what I think about the Golgari Constrictor deck is it's a great deck. It does really well on what most people would consider, I think the term is called fair magic decks, where it's just dropping big dudes and swinging in for a lot of damage. The problem with the deck is that whenever you're dropping a, what I'd said, big dude, that's what turn four or five, I think one of their biggest things that they can do is play a Virtuous Gearhulk. That pretty much wins the game if it resolves. But because of the fact that that's turn five, that's a turn after Aetherworks Marvel comes out, and they usually spin into an Ulamog or some other thing that they have to deal with. I mean, they've got the Walking Ballistas that can come in with extra counters because of their Winding Constrictors, and they've got, you know, Rishkar and Tireless Tracker Grimflayers that are doing pretty good. And Kalidus is always a great answer or a great card for most any situation. But the problem is that, yes, these are all high-value cards at low costs. The problem is that they're not low enough costs. There's, like I said, Aetherworks Marvel turns any card in your deck into a four drop, which is unbelievable. I mean, there's not a lot of, I think the only deck that really does something like that nowadays is what Sneak and Show, I would say. But I mean, obviously it's not going to be as fast as Sneak and Show, but it's for standard, that's insanely good. So everybody's having problems trying to deal with this Aetherworks Marvel.
That's actually, I think, a pretty solid comparison. So far, you're the only person I've heard mention Aetherworks Marvel being at not as high a tier or as comparable to a legacy deck as Sneak and Show. With Sneak and Show, you do have to have something in hand to sneak out, obviously, for the win. Aetherworks Marvel, you have to have something in the top six cards to sneak out for the win. There are ways you could set both things up, and I think that is a fair comparison. In recent standard, we do have cards like Collected Company, where it was turning 2-3 drops or 1 drops into 3 drops at instant speed. So I think it's a fair comparison, I think, at least in recent standard, to compare Aetherworks Marvel to Collected Company. You did mention Virtuous Gearhulk earlier. I do remember that in the Pro Tour Almancat, there was a Golgari deck that took top 8, and believe it or not, it did not run any Gearhulks. It ran Bone Picker over Gearhulk to lower the curve. If I remember right, it was running Bone Picker as a 4 of in the deck over a Virtuous Gearhulk. I don't know necessarily agree with the way things should go, but if everything goes accordingly for the Golgari deck, you can get that out effectively turn 2 for 1 mana. You might even be able to play 2 on turn 2, depending on what just happened. There are plenty of ways to, I think, utilize that card, and with Bone Picker, it does give them a little bit more edge when it comes to the Marvel matchup, I think. So do you have any thoughts on Bone Picker potentially being main board in the Golgari decks?
So my thoughts on Bone Picker, that's the four drop flyer. Yeah, that's it costs three less whenever something dies. My thoughts on that is that I guess when it's up against other fair decks, it seems to be better than the Gear Hulk because it comes down quicker. It's a flyer. You can put counters on it with your Rishkar, and it's a little harder to deal with. I mean, I think any kind of evasion in those fair deck matchups is always going to be the winner on that one. So
with Golgari, they are running Kalita, so I do think that does give them a bit more of an edge when it comes to, say, against zombies. If a zombie dies, it's just going to get exiled. And then zombies is also running Kalita, so that's another way to give, I think, zombies a long run, a really strong creature. So it's a good move against zombies. But is there any particular reason why you think that they're not running artifact removal main, like a Manglehorn or maybe a dispossessed side, one dispossessed side, one dispossessed main? I know that's not the way things necessarily want to go, but usually most decks right now have some sort of artifact that you can get rid of. With Is It Control, it's usually Torrential Gearhulk. With Marvel, it is actually Aetherworks Marvel. With Mardu vehicles, there's a number of vehicles you could hit. I think the only deck that it doesn't reliably hit right now is zombies. So do you have any thoughts on that, per se?
Well, I know that, I think Green-Black, what was it? Green-Black Delirium used to run Manglehorn, one Manglehorn's main board, I think. And I know I've seen, at least locally, a couple red-blue decks that run at least Transgress the Mind main board. And Dispossess, I wasn't sure if they were running it main board. I know they ran it side because I got hit with it a couple of times myself, but they might run it main board. I'm not a huge fan of running it main board because, yes, granted, there are almost every single deck in Standard right now in the top eight are running at least one artifact main board, but the thing is that this post-sideboard, you should be trying to not only do what your deck does, but stifle their deck from doing what their deck does. Pre-sideboard, you're just trying to do what your deck does, and you're doing your best to get that before they can get theirs, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So
I like that. Get theirs, get yours before they get theirs. I might steal that from you if you don't mind. So I think that brings us almost full circle. We do have a couple more decks to talk about in Standard. But Mardu Vehicles is now starting to make a small resurgence. In the Montreal event, I believe it took two spots, and then the event before that, I think there was one spot. I could be wrong. It could have things switched around. So that now that Mardu Vehicles is starting to show back up, especially when it didn't make a single showing in the top eight Pro Tour for Amonkhet, do you think Mardu is in a slightly better spot, or is there anything that you think that they need to adjust more to start taking back the main deck in the format? I personally think it's a little slow, especially against Aetherworks Marvel. I think most decks are too slow. But with Marvel Energy, it's also a coin flip at the same time.
So with Mardu Vehicles, I know that there was a lot of people playing Mardu Vehicles back before they banned Felidar Guardian. And so roughly it was, I think it was 38% people playing Saheeli Cat combo, and then there was slightly less, or maybe more, I can't remember, playing Mardu Vehicles, because I think a lot of people were feeling that Felidar Guardian was going to get banned eventually, which they were correct on that. The deal is that since there were so many people playing Mardu Vehicles, I feel like after so long of practice that they'd had playing that deck, yeah, you can sit there and build a top-tier deck and go to your Friday Night Magic and try and play it, and you could probably win. But if you're going into one of these Grand Prix where everybody's a professional Magic player, and you try to jam a deck that you've just built the day before, you're not going to succeed. And all these people who have been playing Mardu Vehicles for the past, year, I guess, they have so much practice in it that they feel that they can, with their skill with that deck, beat out other people who have only been playing these decks for maybe 1 or 2 weeks. So, yeah, because of the fact that there's so many Mardu Vehicle players still, you'll see it below the top eight. There's, I think, like another 8 or 10 in the top 16, all day with the top 16. There's going to be so many Mardu Vehicle players playing this that, of course, there are going to be some that are eking through into the top 8.
Point taken, there's something I am starting to notice a little bit more about the Mardu Vehicles resurgence. With Mardu Vehicles resurgence, we actually are starting to see Archangel Avacyn go up in price, whereas a lot of decks weren't playing it beforehand. we do see a lot of decks now playing Avacyn. Is she potentially the reason why Mardu is making this resurgence, or is she actually in what's holding Mardu back? We do have a lot of kill spells in Standard at right now, but we do also have a lot of exile and sacrifice effects with, like, To the Slaughter is a sacrifice effect, Ulamog's an exile effect, Anguish Unmaking, which is seeing play in the black-white zombie deck as a main three of is starting to see play. Is she what's keeping them in the game right now, do you think, or is she just a liability?
Well, with Archangel Avacyn, honestly, I think that's one of the better standard Magic cards. Unfortunately, they just don't have entire decks that are built around her. I think that's one of the better Magic cards that are in Standard right now. For the value that you get for five mana, she's insanely good. I think that she's actually helping out Mardu Vehicles right now, because when they're playing other fair deck matchups like Golgari Constrictor, they can manage to swing through confidently through all of their other creatures, because they can hold up an Archangel Avacyn to protect all their creatures from getting destroyed via combat damage. And so that definitely, if you have that confidence of being able to swing through and get that damage in as a fair deck in Magic, it becomes a lot easier to win the game.
So we keep going back to this concept of a fair deck. So would you say that Aetherworks Marvel leans towards a more unfair deck, or is it, in your opinion, fair to say, because of the coin flip-like deck, that it also is included in that status?
Well, so when I talk about fair deck, that's one of these terms, I guess, in Magic, that when somebody's talking about a fair deck, quote-unquote, they mean essentially what Wizards had intended for the game, which was you throw down creatures, you swing at each other, and the person who deals 20 damage to the other person first wins. And the idea of milling somebody out or playing a card that just says you win the game or something like that, I feel like that's not exactly what Wizards was going for, but what a lot of people still like, so that Wizards will cater to them. But you can tell that these fair decks, what people call them, are more of just your traditional style of Magic, where there's, you know, creatures and kill spells and just trying to lay the beatdowns, try to kill them. So to answer your question about Aetherworks Marvel being an unfair deck, I don't think it's necessarily unfair. I think that it, yes, you're right about the coin flip being, it'd be a 50-50 or not, I wouldn't even say 50-50, so I don't know the percentages exactly, but you either get it or you don't. It's not like a guaranteed win or anything like that. It's definitely very hard to come back from a turn four Ulamog, but the idea is still not easy to deal with. So it's a little bit harder to play against at the beginning. Maybe I wouldn't consider it more of a mid-range deck. I guess Mardu Vehicles, if they don't get killed towards the beginning, it'll be a little bit harder for them to be dealt with. So
I'm actually starting to see myself deck and stone starting to pick up steam, especially with the amount of Ulamogs that are seeing play in Standard. I'm kind of hoping the card does see a bit more play. To me, it's annoying, but I think it's one of the few solid ways for sure that we have to deal with Ulamog and stuff that is just very hard to get rid of. It doesn't deal with Sphinx of the Last Word, which I think we definitely need more sacrifice effects for, easier sacrifice effects that are more targeted. I like To the Slaughter as a card, but the fact that it gives your opponent a choice to do this or that, to me, depending on which way the game is going, isn't the best. I don't think To the Slaughter is actually seeing as much play as it probably should, in this current Standard format, at least.
So with sacrifice effects, yeah, it's not a bad idea, but the only problem that I see with that, and you'll have to excuse me, I guess I have a bias to get towards control decks because I've always favored them. They seem to hit more of the, I guess, control variants, whereas, say, with Aetherworks Marvel, they would turn three play a Rogue Refiner, and then turn four spend their Aetherworks Marvel to get an Ulamog, and then if you tried to play To the Slaughter for them, they would just sack their Rogue Refiner and still have an Ulamog in play. The Deccan Stone actually mathematically works out just right for Ulamog, because if he resolves and pops two of your lands, you only have two lands left, or you'll have one land left, you know, if you miss a land drop or something, so you can play another land, you have two lands to Deccanstone, Ulamog, and yeah, it seems sort of insurmountable coming back from being time-walked twice, but, you know, it's something that you can come back from, especially if they were playing sort of glass cannon-y. They don't have any more energy to kind of pump into their Marvel. They have to spend those two turns while you're getting more lands, them trying to get more energy. But Sphinx of the Final Word, I think it's sort of like it's a good control card, considering the fact that you haven't killed the control player by turn 7, most control decks, you have to kill them within a certain time, or they just essentially turn the game around, and they'd stabilize and start coming back. So it's not even as soon as that card hits the field, they win the game, because, I mean, they could be at one life and have to use that to block, and then you put down two creatures, and then they're dead because they don't have a kill spell, and they can't block both creatures, so... It all depends. If you can't kill the control player fast enough, the control player stabilize and come back. So,
you know, actually, now that you bring up Sphinx of the Last Word, it kind of reminds me of an old control card you used to play, Prolake Age. I don't know if you remember that, but that card was a pain in the butt to deal with in Standard when Khans of Tarkir had a sufficient control format. So we are seeing at least a resurgence of control. I'm hoping we do see an emergence of the big three archetypes that we have now. We do have a few solid aggro decks. There's one combo deck currently in Standard with Aetherworks Marvel, and we're starting to see control finally make a resurgence. So hopefully this trend continues. With that in mind, we do also have emergence of two more decks seemingly out of nowhere. I think in the Montreal there was a red-green monsters deck, and we both know somebody here at the shop who used to play red-green monsters all the time. And they usually took game days with it, or they would be rather salty at the end of the day because it didn't show up for them. But do you think Red Green Monsters has potential for a resurgence as well?
Yeah, so with, I think it was Jund Monsters, that deck, it runs a lot of gods, or at least two different gods, if I'm not mistaken. I think it runs the red and the green god. The cool thing about that is that they're indestructible, obviously, so they have a hard time of being removed. So once their condition of being able to block an attack is met, it's almost game over. They've got a huge monster that's just swinging in over and over again and blocking these anything pretty much, because, I mean, it doesn't die. So I'm happy you brought up Pearl Lake Ancient earlier. That was one of my favorite Magic cards from back in the day. A lot of people that I've talked to who played the blue-black control deck that ran that always said that that was a bad card in Magic, not saying that that was a bad card in the deck, because obviously that was the win condition, but I don't know. I still just absolutely love that card. It may be a bad card, but that's got a very special place in my heart.
Yeah, you're right. It is a Jund. I'll admit I had to look that one up. It's not exactly red-green monsters. Maybe with the emergence of the next set, we'll see a red-green monsters-centric focus, but I think that does require red to get a bit more usable kill spells outside of shock and stuff like that. Red's going to have to make a burn resurgence for it to go to that direction. But we do see a lot of the gods in there, and if I remember right from what I looked up earlier, the Jund variant is also playing Heart of Khorne, which is surprising to me. It's a very good 2-drop. The deck also seems to be filled with 2-drops and 3-drops and stuff like that. But if it has the option to, it can be piloted by a god. It can do a lot of other things. So do you think Heart of Khorne, because of this other deck possibly emerging, is going to pick up price or anything like that?
So I don't know if the whole deck itself is going to start rising in price. I mean, some of the gods, I think the red and the green one were already the most expensive, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. I try to keep up with the prices on Magic cards, but mostly what's in my collection just to make sure that I'm, you know, not getting ranched or anything. You make a good point about Heart of Khorne. The cool thing about that is you can play it turn 2, and you can play one of your gods turn 3. And I'm guessing at that point in time, you wouldn't be able to swing with them because you have too many cards in hand, or you don't have a 4-drop creature. And so they can go ahead and just pilot the vehicle, whereas the older gods, the enchantment gods, wouldn't have been able to. So that's an interesting interaction between the cards that are in Standard right now. And of course, you know, Heart of Khorne is a 2-drop 4/4 with flying and vigilance. How could you not run that card if you don't have cards? If you have the cards that can run with it, you absolutely run a 4 of in just about anything. So
point taken. I do think the deck will hopefully pick up steam. I've always kind of liked Jund as a format, and we also do know another player who really likes Jund. We call him the landlord for different reasons, but he might be excited the deck's starting to pick up and might actually get him back into Standard. He's been playing a lot of Modern and Legacy as well, usually both Jund, except in Legacy, ironically enough, he does play lands. No, that's not the reason why we call him the landlord. That's a different story for a different day. But there is one deck I would like to touch on really quick before we end this week's podcast, and that is the zombie variants. So we do have three zombie variants that I've seen in Standard. We have Dimir zombies, Mono Black zombies, and then we have Orzhov zombies. So is there any particular zombie deck that you think outshines the rest?
As for the zombies, I mean, I think for most tribal decks, a single color always seems to be... more focused. So mono black, of course, is, in my opinion, going to be a lot stronger than your other Orzhov or Dimir counterparts. I'm not saying that it's a better deck. I just think that it's more focused at what it's trying to do, which is put out a lot of zombies, pump them up with their champions, and swing in for game. Whereas with the Orzhov build, you actually remove, or you have more removal spells, such as you were saying, Anguished I'm making, I think. And I'm sure they run a grasp or two in there to sort of curve out. The thing that I would like to see with zombies, and I know it's a really high drop, I think it's a 6-drop Rise from the Tides, I believe is what it's called. And it doesn't necessarily have to be just a strictly, you put out a bunch of 1- and 2-drop zombies. It could be more like a control variant where turn 5 you play, I think it's Liliana's Mastery, where you put out 2 zombies and all zombies you control get +1/+1. And then for turn 6, when you're trying to counter and kill just about everything that they've got, you play Rise from the Tides turn 6, and you have, say, like, I don't know, 5-6 more zombies that are all 3/3s, and they can swing in the game next turn.
Yeah, that's a good point to bring up. I think the black-blue variant does have potential to come back, especially if they start running a few more things like Disallow and stuff. Only issue with the black-blue variant is you don't have access to a lot of the more solid cards, I think. I know with the Orzhov, they generally don't run the Grasp. They prefer to run Anguish. They prefer to run Fatal Push. And I think you would see the same thing with the Dimir variants. They wouldn't run Grasp. They would instead run Fatal Push or other spells to bounce stuff back to hand or counter stuff, which is fine with me. One card that I'm actually looking forward to seeing a bit more play, and it's not right now, is Plaguebearer. The 3-drop 5/4, put 2 -1/-1 counters on something. And it has Menace. Whenever a zombie dies, it gets target opponent loses 1 life. I believe, from what I've seen, at least in all the top 8s, that card is not seeing a lot of play, which is surprising to me. Maybe it'll see play on rotation, and it might be a card that I'm actually going to stock up on. I just really enjoy the card as a whole. I think there's room in zombies somewhere for it. It's just a matter of you got to fit it in there somewhere. There probably are a few better 3-drops. But slamming down a 5/4 with Menace on turn 3, especially to me, just seems really good, even if you have to kill off one of your zombie tokens. Worst comes to worst, you can just put the 2 -1/-1 counters on the guy who returns from grave at sorcery speed, return him from grave the next turn, and then swing with a 5/4 with Menace.
So I believe you're thinking of Plague Belcher. That is a great card. I thought it was going to be in zombies. In fact, most of the tapped out deck lists that I looked at online for zombies had at least a copy of it, if not, you know, 3, maybe even 4. I think the only reason, but one of the big reasons why they're not running that card is because they would much rather, instead of playing a 3-drop 5/4, or I guess in a zombie player's eyes, a 3-drop 1 body, they would much rather play a 1- and 2-drop 2 bodies. Or a 1-drop from their hand, 1 body, and recur something from their graveyard, or, you know, any other thing that they can do with their mana that makes it a lot more efficient and going wide. Because a lot of zombie players, or most tribal decks, go wide as opposed to just playing bigger creatures. So
I think that's a good point to make, and I do apologize to everyone. Yes, it is Plague Belcher for sure. Good catch on that. I think a lot of the drops right now, especially Mono Black, are actually playing 3-drop Lily over Plague Belcher, which I think is a really good call. If you want to make a substitute, always substitute the 3-drop Planeswalker over a creature. 9 times out of 10, there are very few times that you don't want that to happen. As a whole, I do think, especially if you can ult Liliana in a zombie deck, the 3-drop one, not the 5-drop one, that one's almost a guaranteed win for games, especially if you can combo with Lords or something like that, or if you can combo it with Metallic Mimic. I think that might be the area you want to go. And you were saying Liliana's Mastery. Well, a lot of mono black decks are running that as a 3-of or 4-of in their deck, whereas you don't get to usually run that in the white-black build. With the white-black build as well, they also miss out on what I think is a good finisher. I mentioned it in my last week's show, and I'm going to mention again here, but Westvale Abbey is a very solid finisher, and you see that mono-black decks are usually running that as a 2-of. And an issue that a lot of people also have with the mono-black decks is the same issue that they have with Ulamog when he sees plays, the fact that he is indestructible. When I mention he, it's Ormondal, the flip side of Westvale Abbey. He's indestructible, haste, flying, lifelink, and usually when he swings, nothing can block him. So there's very little that can deal with him. Yes, he's not a zombie, but he's a great finisher, and you don't see that finisher in the black-white decks or the blue-black decks that are floating around right now.
So Westvale Abbey and any heavy creature deck that is able to recur their creatures from the graveyard efficiently is always a great idea. I mean, not a lot of people can deal with Ormondal, I think is what the creature's name is. It's pretty indomitable. So being able to deal with that card, the difficulty of that just makes it so much easier for zombies to win, considering the fact that it has lifelink and can essentially reverse the game, putting somebody at 11 and you at 29. The other point that you brought up with Lily, as the 3-drop Lily, one thing that a lot of the zombie variants seem to like about that is that they can recur creatures efficiently with Lily. I mean, it'll get you one or two creatures out of the graveyard, put some more in the graveyard so you can possibly put in Dread Wanderer, I think. Yeah, Dread Wanderer. So if you end up milling Dread Wanderer with Lily, you don't have to pick that to put it back in your hand, and you can put that from the graveyard to the battlefield and put whatever you got from Lily into the battlefield as well. And it's just straight card advantage because you essentially just drew two cards by doing that ability.
Speaking of Dread Wanderer, something else I kind of noticed about it is even though you bring it back at sorcery speed, it does add it's a 2-1. It does something that a lot of the other 2-1s in this format and 2-1s in the past, especially with zombies, haven't been able to do, and that is block, ironically enough. So yes, it is still value late game. You summon it on the field for 3 at sorcery speed, but that doesn't mean at any point you won't have a blocker. As long as you have 3 mana, it becomes a blocker for you, which I think just makes the card really good.
I just now noticed that, too. That's funny. I never thought of that, because, I mean, there's always been a huge history of mono black aggro cards that are 1-drops, 2-1s that can't block, like, Blood-Soaked Champion, Gnarled Scarhide, Gravecrawler. There's a lot of them, and this one actually can block, which is really cool, so that you can actually turn your Dread Wanderer into almost a kill spell that you can recur from your graveyard if you're playing against other zombies. So that's actually a really, really cool thing.
It's a cheap way to trigger revolt, too, when you think about it. Just chump block, and then all of a sudden you can fatal push something or deal something else with Dread Wanderer. But that being said, I do think we are out of time for right now. So before we end it, Stevie, do you have any closing words you'd like to say or anything like that?
Being somebody who's owned and collected Magic cards from a young age and got in and got out of it over and over again, I'd have to say, first off, if you ever decide, if you do play Magic and you decide to stop playing, don't sell your cards. I know it's not even about a monetary value. It's just something that you realize that it's something. Nobody ever quits Magic. I mean, they'll always love it. They'll always play it. I mean, those people who actually play it for fun and have a good time with it, it's fine to take a hiatus, but just hang on to your stuff. And second off, if you ever want to become a judge, just look on, I believe Wizards has a list of all the judges. Just look for a level 2 judge, get in contact with them. It's not that difficult, and it definitely helps out your community a lot to be able to go to a shop and judge tournaments and have that shop have more tournaments because they have access to a local judge. So yeah, just do whatever you can to help out your Magic community and keep having a good time playing Magic.
Definitely wise words to live by, and I know you said earlier before we started this that you didn't have a Twitter or anything, so this is where I would pan your Twitter if you had it. Maybe one of these days you'll hop on it or some other thing like that. If you guys would like to follow me, you can follow me at MTG Eternities on Twitter, and you can find me on YouTube by the same name, MTG Eternities. As we say our closing lines today, I'd like to thank Stevie again for joining me on here. I'd like to say all lines of thought are open for all Magic seekers. This is your host from MTG Eternities, signing out.